All right, community drugs. The first one is rifampin, and it's a tuberculosis drug. And really, that's all we're going to say about it. Next one is isoniazid or INH. And again, it's a tuberculosis drug, and that's all we're going to say about it. Next, now, I will say about the TB drugs, most TB in the world nowadays is resistant to multiple drugs. And because of HIV and because of the immigration boom lately, a lot of those resistant strains are here in the United States. So if a patient has TB, they need to have multiple therapy. The other thing is they usually need, because tuberculosis is such a slow-growing disease, you have to be treated at least 6 months. Because of that, a lot of people just kind of stop taking it, or they get lost, or they change jobs, and they just can't kind of get lost to the system. So what they've switched to in a lot of counties now is what they call direct observed therapy. So when you're in community and you go to the health clinic, you might have a nurse or at least a tech or like a CNA who's in charge or LPN who's in charge of going to people's homes and administering that therapy and watching them take it so that you make sure that they actually take the drug for the full 6 weeks, full 6 months or longer that it might take. All right, next we have Epivir. Epivir is a non-nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitor. It works similarly to AZT, but a little different. Basically, it prevents the HIV virus from putting its DNA or its RNA and reverse transcribing it into DNA so that it can infect the host cell and make it produce more viruses. Usually, you use this in combination with three or four other medications, and that combination of multiple HIV drugs together is referred to as HART, or highly active retroviral therapy. If you only use one or two drugs against HIV, it becomes resistant to them very, very quickly. You have to use three to four drugs if you want it to be successful. Next, we have Bicillin. Bicillin is just the brand name for penicillin G. Now, if you remember way, way back for penicillin G, what makes it special or different from regular penicillin VK? VK is only orally, and G is, well, it's parenteral. There's three different kinds, three different bases. One is procaine, one is potassium, and I forget the other one. So some of them are IM, some of them are IV. And one of them, you give a shot, an IM shot, and it lasts for a whole month. So make sure you know which one you're giving when you give penicillin G. The major treatment for penicillin G once upon a time was syphilis. Syphilis and the oral contracept, or syphilis, penicillin and the oral contraceptive pill ushered in the sexual revolution. It's beautiful. All right, now, before we go, there's just two more things that I wanted to talk about because we didn't do these in Pathopharm 2 for you. One of them is hormone replacement therapy and oral contraceptives. Hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, is basically estrogen for women who are in menopause. In the old days, we used to think that it did all kinds of wonderful things for them, like prevent heart attacks and make their bones grow stronger. And it might help bones a little bit, but we've determined that it doesn't seem to help heart disease at all. What we do use them for is we use them for symptoms. So when a woman goes into menopause, she might get hot flashes, mood swings, a bunch of other things make her just miserable and the people around her miserable. So you can use hormone replacement therapy in order to smooth that transition. After a woman has a hysterectomy, if it's a total abdominal hysterectomy, they take the ovaries, and we call that a surgical menopause. If they don't take the ovaries, and it's a partial hysterectomy, a lot of times afterwards, within the next 3 to 5 years, the ovaries will atrophy and stop working. So they can also experience menopause early. Now, the rule is, if a woman has a uterus, then you cannot give estrogen by itself, because the woman will most likely get, not most likely, but the woman has a much higher risk of getting endometrial cancer. So to protect the uterus, we're going to combine the estrogen with progesterone or progestin. The most common one is called medroxyprogesterone. So if a woman has a uterus, we're going to give a combination. If she's had a hysterectomy, you're going to give estrogen by itself. Question there?
What's that called? What it's combined
with? Medroxyprogesterone. So some brand names or some drug names you might want to be familiar with, because these might be on the NCLEX or on your farm ATI. The first one is estradiol. Estradiol is a very old drug. It's artificial estrogen. And you can give this only to women who do not have uteruses. The next one is called Premarin. Premarin is natural estrogen. It's sometimes called conjugated estrogens. And it comes from horse pee. So the horses pee, and when they pee, there's estrogen in the pee. You distill and concentrate it, and now you've got Premarin. If you combine Premarin with medroxyprogesterone, you get something called PremPro. Pro for progesterone. So PremPro is the combination drug which you would use for a woman who has her uterus. All right, next we have oral contraceptive pills, OCPs. Now, there's also more than just that. We'll talk about it in a second. Now, do women who need oral contraceptives, or any contraceptives, do they have uterus? Yes, because if they didn't have a uterus, they wouldn't need them, right? So all of these women can't have estrogen by itself. They need to have estrogen plus progesterone or progestin. For some reason, they love to call it progestin here. So they're all going to be either a combination of estrogen and progestin, or you can use progestin by itself. You're probably familiar with the progestin-only drug, something you get a shot once every 13 weeks. Depo-Provera. So Provera is the brand name of medroxyprogesterone, and the depo is because you're leaving it in a depot under their skin. So a progestin-only would be like Depo-Provera, or one that's been taken off the market was Norplant. If you remember that, I don't know. It was something you put under your skin that lasts like 5 years. But they took that off the market. You take it out. Take it out. The interesting thing about progestin is that the major, major side effect is weight gain. On average, 15 pounds. The other thing is that you don't have a period when you're on progestin. And progestin contraceptives. All right, now, estrogen plus progesterone, there's four different kinds. There's low dose, high dose, and medium dose estrogen, and then what we call phasic, where the dose of estrogen rises and falls throughout the cycle. You don't need to know any of the drug names because there's like 50 of them. There's no point in learning any of them. What? Low dose, medium dose, and high, and then we call phasic. Now, anyone here on oral contraceptives? Okay, so you take 3 weeks, and then they give you a different colored pill that you're supposed to take for the other week. What's that? It's a sugar pill. Why do they make you do that? To remind you. Because you're supposed to not take the pill for at least a week. Why is that? So you can have a fake period. Yes, it's not a true period. It's what we call withdrawal bleeding. Now, why did they do that? I mean, couldn't you just take them forever and never have a period? Is it perfectly safe to do that? It's perfectly safe to do that. The reason it was done was because way, way back in the late 50s, early 60s, when they developed the pill, they thought that society would never accept it if they just suppressed menstruation forever. So the idea was, what? When you go off them, you will bleed, and it'll look like a period, but it's not a period. It's a fake period. But if you stay off it, then you'll go back to periods. But as long as you take it continuously, you'll never have a period.
What's a long time, like, side effect of that? It doesn't sound good.
Side effect of that is you start having babies without
consent. Yeah, but it doesn't cause anything, like, down the line?
No. Not that we can tell. Okay, now that is a good question. In the early days, the doses of estrogen were much higher than they are now. Even the high dose estrogen now is relatively low. So if you miss even one day, you can actually become fertile for that day. And so ovulation may occur. Now here's the other thing about the oral contraceptives, is that if you do ovulate, because they suppress the proliferation of the uterus, probably the fertilized egg will just get flushed out of the body and implantation will never occur. So there's some Christians who say, well, I'm not going to take oral contraceptives because of that chance. I don't want to have an abortion by accident. So that's something that, you know, you will run into some people who will have that view. So, you know, in a very technical sense, they're correct. So, you know, they're not crazy. It's just their choice. But you do need to take them approximately the same time every day for maximum effectiveness. Now, the other thing that you're going to hear a lot about is antibiotics. Antibiotics inhibit the effectiveness of oral contraceptive pills. It's not true. There's one that does, and it's streptomycin. Really, all of the other antibiotics that we use commonly do not. So a lot of, but because that one does, you know, if you go to a doctor's office, they're going to tell you you need to use backup contraceptives. You don't. But if they don't tell you that, and you screw up, and you get pregnant, well, now you're going to sue them because they didn't tell you. But in reality, it's. There are some other medications that can inhibit the effectiveness of oral contraceptive pills, but antibiotics don't. But for your test, you might have to pretend like they do. Now, the last thing you need to know about oral contraceptives, anytime you give estrogen, you increase the risk for clotting. And if you combine estrogen with smoking, the risk is like quadruple. So a lot of doctors don't like to give oral contraceptive pills to women who smoke. And the reason is because of that increased risk of clotting. And so if you have a question about oral contraceptive pills, chances are it's going to be combined with smoking, and you would need to know increased risk for clotting. Because that's a huge patient safety thing. All right, the last thing we need to talk about before I let you go is gout drugs. So let's go way, way back to gout. What is gout? Well, it can cause arthritis, but it's an increased level of uric acid level in the blood, And that uric acid can crystallize in joints and cause arthritis, which we call gouty arthritis or gouty arthropathy. What's the most common joint to be affected? Well, fingers are fairly common, but usually the classic one is the big toe. The classic joint is the big toe. And it's not the toe itself, it's actually the joint that connects the toe to the foot. I guess they call it don't ask me. We'd call it an MCP if it were your hand, so maybe it's the NTP. Anyway, so uric acid levels cause crystallization in the joints, causing inflammation. So the first thing we want to do is treat them. If they have a flare, there's two things. One is flares, and the other is long-term treatment. For a flare, because it's an inflammation problem, what do you think we're going to use to treat it? An anti-inflammatory. And an NSAID is the drug of choice. Now, the drug that you usually associate, the NSAID you usually associate with gout is Indocin or Indomethacin. And it's a very old drug. It works really, really well, but it is a ton of nasty side effects in terms of GI bleeding and renal toxicity. So it's not the safest drug, but it does work very well. But any of them will work. Naproxen will work, ibuprofen will work, Toradol will work. Any NSAID will work. Then the next one is a drug called colchicine, C-O-L-C-H-I-S-I-N-E, colchicine. I don't know if I spelled that out loud correctly. I wrote it right. C, right. Okay, so colchicine, what it does is it inhibits white blood cells from leaving the blood vessel and going to the site of inflammation. So if you remember, again, way, way back to inflammation, one of the things that happens in inflammation is you get vasodilation and you get an increase in capillary membrane permeability, which causes redness and swelling. And then you also get a release of chemicals called chemokines that attract white blood cells to that area. Well, colchicine is kind of like a chemokine inhibitor. It prevents the white blood cells from going to that area as much. It's typically given by mouth, and you give it every hour and a half or every 2 hours until either the patient feels better or they can't stand the diarrhea anymore. So that's how it's usually given. So the major adverse effect is diarrhea. It can also cause leukopenia and some other problems, and it was featured in an episode of House. But that's neither here nor there. So you use colchicine for flares. It's usually not given when a patient doesn't have a flare. Now the third drug is for long-term suppression, and that's allopurinol. And if a patient has been on allopurinol and is stable, when they have a flare, you keep them on it. But if they're having a flare, you don't start them on it until the flare is resolved. And what allopurinol does is it reduces the levels of uric acid in the body overall. And that's all she wrote. So you guys are done with me forever. Don't cry. I know it's crocodile tears.